To open your Bibles to the 8th chapter of Luke, we'll read the 26th through the 39th verses. The sermon title is, Who Shapes Your Character? Who Shapes Your Character? Luke 8, 26 through 39. Starting with verse 26. They arrived at the country of the Gadarenes, which is over against Galilee. When he went forth to land, there met him out of the city a certain man, which had devils long time, and wear no clothes, neither abode in any house, but in the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell down before him, and with a loud voice said, What have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of God, Most High? I beseech thee, torment me not. For he had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man, for oftentimes it had caught him, and he was kept bound with chains and in fetters, and he brake the bands and was driven of the devil into the wilderness. And Jesus asked him, saying, What is thy name? He said, Legion, because many devils were entered into him. And they besought him, that he would not command them to go out into the deep. And there was an herd of many swine feeding on the mountain, and they besought him that he would suffer them to enter into them. And he suffered them. Then went the devils out of the man and entered into the swine, and the herd ran violently down a steep place into the lake and were choked. When they that fed them saw what was done, they fled and went and told it in the city and in the country. Then they went out to see what was done and came to Jesus and found the man out of whom the devils were departed sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. They also which saw it told them by what means he that was possessed of the devils was healed. Then the whole multitude of the country of the Gadarenes round about besought him to depart from them, for they were taken with great fear. And he went up into the ship and returned back again. Now the man out of whom the devils were departed besought him that he might be with him, but Jesus sent him away, saying, Return to thine own house and show how great things God hath done unto thee. And he went his way and published throughout the whole city how great things Jesus had done unto him. Most of us, I would assume, pray that we are people of character. There are a lot of people that are characters, but may not be people of character. And I would think that all of us desire to be people of character. When I was studying for this, I read a statement by a man who said this. He said, Character is not a function or product of style. The word comes from the idea of engraving. He said, My father was a printer who became a publisher. And when I was a young boy, he was the production manager of the daily newspaper in our county seat. In my visits to him at work, I learned that in the printing business, each letter is called a character. The idea is that each letter leaves a distinctive mark. Just so a leader's character is defined by the mark he or she leaves behind. Character is the sum of a person's values, actions, and attitudes. For the leader, character resides not in one style, but in one spirit. And the right leadership spirit is a product of the heart. From the heart flows moral courage, conviction, and conscience, as well as compassion. One of the great challenges we have, I think, in the church is that we become very interested in personality. But sometimes we forget about the issue of character. We want people with good personalities. You realize that, and by the way, this is common and normal, but when people have a pulpit committee, they look for someone that has a good personality. You know that, don't you? Of course, I tell Ruth I have a personality. She might not have a good personality, but I do, but most people don't agree with that. And it's common for people to look for this personality, you know. They want somebody that smiles at them, is able to talk to them, visit. And who doesn't? Who wants old Grump? They want somebody that has a good personality. But the issue is, if you and I allow the personality to become the major issue over the character, we may get somebody that has a great personality but has a lousy character. I mean, they may not be honest. They may not be truthful. They may be people who take things. They may be people who shorten up what they say and adjust it to fit their own desires. It's almost as if we want someone that we can get along with, even if they're not someone that has character. Steve Covey, who wrote the one of the books on the seven items of success. I forget the exact name of the book, but it's something along that line. Seven Habits of Success. He says almost all the literature in the first 150 years of the existence of the United States focused on what could be called the character ethic as the foundation of success. He said things like integrity, humility, fidelity, temperance, courage, justice, patience, industry, simplicity, modesty, and the golden rule. He said, but shortly after World War I, the basic view of success shifted from the character ethic to what we might call the personality ethic. Success became more a function of personality, of public image, of attitudes and behaviors, skills and techniques that lubricate the processes of human interaction. The basic thrust was quick fix influence techniques, power strategies, communication skills, and positive attitudes. I don't know if you recall in your lifetime, but I recall not that long ago where people were talking about our politicians and saying something along the line of their private life does not matter. Well, really? The private life does. The private life speaks about the character. See, the public life can speak about personality, but the private life speaks about character. Who you are, as one author said, who you are when no one is looking. And so all of us, I have to understand that we need to be people of character. And the truth of the matter is we have all had different influences in our lives that help us shape our character. Our parents, your friends, the people you spend time with, the decisions you make, your education, your training, your family interactions, and a multitude of other things help shape the character that you have. But it really boils down to one thing. One thing, and it's simply that you and I must make decisions on what we think is valuable in life. About what's right and what's wrong, and whether we will say yes or no to it. That's what it boils down to. Your character will determine whether you will face the issues of your life, even if they hurt, or if you will do whatever you can to avoid them. Well, what I'd like to do is look at this area of Scripture and look at how character is influenced or how character is shaped here. And I'd like for you to note the devil's influence. Now, you and I ought to understand this clearly. Most of us have been involved in life, the church for years. We have this background of it, but I want you to see it with great clarity, and I hope I can give it to you in that way. When Jesus stepped on the shores of the Gadarenes, one of the first things you see is a confrontation that he engages in with this demon-possessed man. And when you look at it, you have to ask yourself the question of how did that man get to where he's at? What influenced him to be what he was? And most of us do not stop and think about such things, but the reality is that every one of us makes decisions about who is going to influence us in our lives. Is it not strange if I were to come to you and say, you know, you haven't turned to Christ and you're allowing the devil to be your character shaper. Man, you know what kind of a response I would get? People would say, what are you talking about? Man, I don't let the devil tell me what to do. Who do you think I am? What do you think I am? This would really be interesting. And it would really be interesting too if in the life of Christians I'd say, you know, you're making some decisions that are influenced by the devil. You know those little white lies? You know those things that you think that you can get away with and nobody knows about? You're allowing the devil to shape who you are and what you are. I think there would be some people that would be upset with me. And, you know, it's a good thing there's a lot of other churches around so the people could go to those. And because they probably wouldn't stay here as long as I was here. And so we would have people that would be very upset about it. But the reality is that we see that very picture here. Do you remember, Jesus, I believe it's in John 8:44. Jesus says, you are your father, the devil. He talks to the leadership of the Jewish nation, says, you're of your father, the devil. Do you recall how upset they are? If you read that account, note how upset they get with that statement. See, people don't like anybody telling them those kinds of things. My, why would you say that about me? You know, I do all these good things and how can you say that the devil is shaping who I am and what I do? Now, with this particular man, you'll notice that he was disruptive to his community and he was destructive to himself. We read that no one in the community could keep him bound and they had to bind him because he was so disruptive and so destructive. This man was cutting himself as he was in the tombs. Now, as I read this, it caused me to wonder about one of the things that's happening in our society today. Do you realize we have a lot of young people that are out cutting themselves? Now, I don't understand why. I don't get all of that. I don't know if it's supposed to be a sign of rebellion, a sign of the hurts they have. I don't know if it's a psychological issue or anything. But the real issue there is it's a devil issue. When you do those things to yourself, that's the influence of the devil in your life. When you're destructive to yourself, and when you're disruptive to the community, note this. There's something going on with your character and in your life. And there's somebody shaping what you do. You young people, you need to understand that reality. I think that many of the things that we talk about as being psychological issues for young people are really more of an issue of the influence of the devil in their life. Let me just do something. Now, please don't think that I'm discounting the reality and the help that a good psychologist, a Christian psychologist can give. But how many people here have been married over 50 years? Would you just hold your hand up? Come on. Hold up. Everybody look around. I say, we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. About 10 couples represented here. Now, if I did this on Sunday morning, we'd have a lot more than that. Now, how many of you in your 50 years never had a problem? No, I'm just kidding. I had a hand go up, by the way. You young folks, when you have problems in your marriage, let me tell you where some of the first places you could go to. These would be today's first responders for marriage. These people have been married 50 years. Man, they've made it. They've done it. They've wrestled through the problems. They've fought the issues, and they may still be having issues. And some of you that are wondering, how do I deal with this and how do I deal with that? You go down. Now, again, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. You go and you ask somebody that's been married for 5 years and it's their second marriage. That's who I want to tell me how to have a good marriage. That might not have been their fault. Maybe it's a rotten, no good spouse they had. It's probably the wife's problem. I don't know. You know, well, couldn't have been the husband, you know. And so when you look at that, oftentimes what we do in life is we miss out on the biblical truth that is provided. And we miss out on the fact that oftentimes in individual lives, where it's marital problems, whether it's the kids cutting themselves, whatever the issue is, many times, not everything, but many times, is an issue of the devil shaping the character of the person. You act like you act because that's how your character's been shaped. In Matthew 5:5, when Mark wrote about this, you see a man who's so influenced by the devil that no one in the community wanted him to be free. They wanted him to be put in some kind of bondage. And we also see that there in Luke. And also, do we not see that today? Three, 4 months ago, I think it was in Connecticut, a pedophile was going to be released after having served, 20 years, 30 years in prison. And no one in the community wanted them in their community. His mother and father were going to let him move into their house, but the whole community arose up and said no. Friends, oftentimes, we see that process take place. Because, see, someone who has been so influenced by the devil at some point in their life, they've done certain things that we find repulsive or difficult or we hate, and we look at that and we don't want that type of person around us. The man had opened himself up to the devil so much that he was dangerous to be around. You couldn't trust him to do right and you couldn't trust him to act right. And he was so possessed by the devil that the entirety of his life was dedicated to sin. He did not want to do right. He did not attempt to do right. As a matter of fact, he could not do right. This was who he was. His character had been so shaped by the devil that he was merely acting like the person that he'd become. I wonder sometimes, while we may not see that severity in the actions of people around us, maybe it's not quite to that depth, but sometimes they live a certain way, they act a certain way, and maybe it's simply because their character has been shaped by the devil so much that that's what they are. We talked to our daughter yesterday, Friday, I think, whichever day it was, we talked to her, and Ruth and I were in the car, so sometimes I'll call up one of the kids and say, "How you doing?" And we'll talk to them together because I have that Bluetooth thing going. And so, see, you guys didn't know I had that. Was that good in technology? I had to have somebody set it up, though. Yeah. And so we're driving down the road and we're talking, and she said, and Debbie says, Bob went and picked up a friend of his lived in southern Illinois named Tammy Neal. Now, we knew Tammy. She was, I guess we met her when she was about 15 or 16. And Tammy was a beautiful young lady and lived a good life and came from a good family and all those kinds of things. But somewhere in her life, she started making decisions. And our daughter said that... And one thing about our oldest son, he's very loyal to people that he considers his friends and almost to a fault. Said he'd been talking to her and he said, "You just need to come up here and visit some of the people you know and things like that and get away from all that." Her husband's an alcoholic. Said a fall down drunk alcoholic. She said that the previous husband or live-in, whichever it was a fall down drunk alcoholic. I said, "Debbie, didn't you say that you had been somewhere with her recently? She came into town and you guys got together and she was drinking pretty badly." She said, "Yeah, Dad." Said, "She's an alcoholic too." There were decisions along the way that produced that. Now, as kind of a side note, No one plans to be like that. But they probably hear somebody say something along the line of, you know, it's all right to have a drink every now and then. Let's have a glass of wine. And maybe you do well with that. But what about that daughter? That one didn't do well with that. If you really want a good reason not to drink at all, look at the world around you, the people you influence and all those things. That's a basic truth. So here's this young lady who has, in her life, has been so influenced, even though she didn't grow up this way, has been so influenced by the things of the devil that is her life. That is her life. Friend, I think that you and I see people who are so influenced by the devil that their character is marked by the devil himself. And I know, again, please don't misunderstand. I know there's all kinds of issues that can go into that. And this might be a very simplistic answer, but let me tell you, the simplistic answer of the scriptures oftentimes tells us far more than the other things that we think we see everywhere else. You and I will be influenced by our friends, our parents, our neighbors, and we'll be also an influence to the people around us. And if you're not careful, it's easy to reach the place where sin becomes normal for you. That's what you do. That's who you are. You'll be so influenced by the devil that your character will start taking on the shape and the mark of the devil. Now, no wonder the writer of Revelation talked about people who accept the falsehoods of this world and the false teachers of this world in their lives as having the mark of the beast. Some people are waiting for that literal mark to come, and let me tell you, I don't think there's a literal mark to come. Not according to what Revelation tells us and what the rest of the scriptures tell us. I believe this is what the mark is the fact that you or I would be allow the devil to mark us with the sinfulness of who he is and shape us into what he wants. It's the character. Friend, people walk around today marked by the devil. He is the owner. Well, that was the influence on that man's life. But let's look at the impact of Jesus. This account gives us indication that no one is so far gone that they cannot be changed. What a marvelous truth it is. What a glorious, glorious truth there is. The person that you see that you think there's no hope for them. There's no help. There's nowhere they can turn to. There's no one they can go to. There's nothing that can provide them anything they need, because they will break every boundary that there is. They'll push away. They're destructive, self-destructive and damaging to the world around them. But let me tell you this, when Jesus saw them, he provided a character change. What a wonderful, wonderful thing that is for you and I and for the people around us. When you see the guy down the street that staggers all the time because he drinks too much or because he uses drugs or whatever it is, note this, there is help for them. And his name is Jesus. There is help for them. No one, as long as they're breathing in this world, has reached the stage or state of where no help can be provided. Now, note what this man says. He says his name is Legion. And actually, that's speaking about the demons or the devils that's in him. And by the way, in essence, it means there was a boatload of them. Jesus cast them into 2,000 swine. If you can read that in Mark 5:13. 2,000 hogs are inundated by the devils and they can't stand it. Now, I don't know how tall a demon is. And I don't know how wide he is. And so I don't know how many of it took to fill up those swine. But brothers and sisters, note they got filled up with them and they couldn't stand it and they ran down and drowned themselves. And maybe that speaks a little bit about humanity, that we would allow the devil to shape us and mold us and make us and own us, and we are very happy with it sometimes. The pigs couldn't stand it. But here's Jesus. Jesus stepped among them. He cast out these demons, and the man is set free. See, Jesus can impact a person so much that their absolute character is changed. Just so you can see this a little clearer, I want to refer to another biblical account that you know about. In Luke 19, it says, Zacchaeus stood and said unto the Lord, Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I have taken anything from any man by false accusation, I restore him fourfold. And Jesus said unto him, This day is salvation come to this house, for so much as he also is a son of Abraham. Now note what happens. Here's a man. This is his living. This is how he does things. He's done it like this for years. In one meeting with Jesus, he's on a limb up in a tree looking at Jesus so he can see Jesus. And lo and behold, Jesus says, come on down. I'm going to your house. And this man says, look, if I've done anything wrong, if I've taken anything from anybody, I ought not to. I'll pay him back. I'll pay him back fourfold. Man, I'll get it right. I'll get it right. Now here is a character change. Happens in a minute, in an instant. Now, you may think it only happens on a tree limb, but that's not true. It did for that guy. Here he is up in the tree. And all of a sudden, before he hits the ground, his heart and life has changed. He's a different person. By the time he climbed up that tree, one man, and he came down another. And the only thing that happened in between him going up and him coming down was Jesus. Let me say this to you today. I understand there's a lot of issues in life, and we don't understand everything about them. But this I note, that through the scriptures, we see that Jesus can change people. And he can do it instantly. He can take a man or woman that's no good and that's rotten, that has lived a horrible life, and he can clean them up and change them. He can make them different. He can make them new. He can give them something they never had before, and he can make them something they never were before. That's Jesus. Now, it's unexplainable. It's inexplicable. We don't get it all. We can't grasp it. But we see it, and some of us have actually had it happen. You note that Jesus didn't say to this guy, hey, look, let me get you into a class so that we can get you trained correctly, so we get everything right in your life. No, what happens is something that is of God takes place in his life, and there's an amazing character change. The man who used to make his living in a deceitful manner is suddenly changed. This happens because Jesus changes the character. Not just a few things about you. The character. See, it's not a matter of what you did. Some of you may have heard Carl Reynolds talk. I know a few of you here knew of Carl Reynolds, a great preacher in the Church of God. And he talked about living in West Virginia as a young man working in a glass factory. And he said when he got saved, said the next day he went to work. And he said he had the trunk of his car filled up with tools and things he'd stolen from work. And he went in and told his boss, said, look, you may fire me for this, but I stole a bunch of stuff and I became a Christian last night and I got to bring it back to you. Got to bring it back. There was a character change. Something took place that made him different. And brothers and sisters, Jesus does that for life. If you doubt that he can do that for you, I'd remind you that when he met this man would have seemed to have been one of the worst men there ever was. Folks, he lived in the tombs. Now here's one of the great questions. When Jesus comes to shore and this guy sees him, could it have been because that demon-possessed man considered that his territory and nobody messed in his territory. And he was going to take care of that guy and that group. He'd done it before. Everybody else was scared of him. They wanted him chained up. They didn't want him running loose. He comes running down the hill. All those demons pushing and guiding and pressuring. And all of a sudden, he meets Jesus. He meets Jesus. And everything is different. Everything is different. Legion falls down and says, "Oh no, don't make me go before it's time. Cast us into the swine." And Jesus says, "Okay, but the swine won't have them. The swine won't have them." Well, Jesus does that. Let's look at the ending results of all this. I've talked about this before in our classes, CL for CL. But this is one of the most wonderful pieces of where you see a life change, where you see the results of the life change. This man, when we read it about the end of the account, you'll find that this man is given a right mind. From this point on, he clothes himself, which he had not been doing before. And what that tells you is that Jesus makes people suitable for society. Suitable for society. Changed his actions. He changed the way he dressed. Actually, got him dressed. He no longer cut himself. He stopped living in the tombs. Those are amazing changes. Amazing. And if you were to ask the people that day, did Jesus make a difference? You would have undoubtedly found a unanimous shout of affirmation that day. Yeah, you better believe it. He made a difference. Now, not all of them liked it. Isn't it amazing? Here's a man like this, and they prefer hogs over the man. You see, they want Jesus out of there because he's affected their economic situation. Evidently, they're used to selling hogs, and if they don't have hogs to sell, they're in trouble. And Jesus just enabled those hogs to run down into the sea and drown. And so they're scared. They don't want Jesus there. And yet they look at that man. I mean, could there be any doubt? Could there be any question that something marvelous and amazing had taken place in the life of this man? Well, so the people tell Jesus to leave, and Jesus says, "Okay." And what do you think the man wants to do? He wants to go with Jesus. And Jesus said, "No, you stay here." And this is how he states, "Show how great things God hath done unto thee." And then read the rest of it. And he says, "And he went his way and published throughout the whole city how great things Jesus had done unto him." Man, if you were there that day, you might be, you know, in the village square and sitting there talking with some of your friends, and in walks the old pig guy, you know. And the pig guy says, "Man, Jesus cast demons out of old demon-possessed fella. And my hogs all ran down into the sea." And they say, yeah. "You just had, your pigs just ate some kind of strange weed, you know." And he says, "No." And all of a sudden, in comes the demon-possessed guy. He comes walking down the road. And he walks into that group. And here he is, all changed. I mean, he's got his clothes on. He doesn't cut himself. He's not shouting. I don't know. Maybe they might have thought about, "Let's get out of town here. You know, he's going to go nuts on us again." But it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. He's changed everything about him. But that wasn't the ending result of it. It really wasn't. Jesus told him to stay there. Tell him what happened. Well, if you would read the sixth chapter of Mark. The fifth chapter of Mark is the where Mark tells about this event. The sixth chapter is when he tells what's happening later. verse 53 says, when they had passed over, they came to the land of Gennesaret, which is the same place as he was before, just a different name. It's the same place. He drew to the shore, and when they were come out of the ship, straightway they knew him, and ran through that whole region round about, and began to carry about in beds those that were sick, where they heard he was. And whithersoever he entered, into villages or cities or country, they laid the sick in the streets and besought him that they might touch, if it were but the border of his garment, and as many as touched him were made whole. Now get this. What's the difference between Mark 5 and Mark 6? Mark 5, they say, get out of town. Mark 6, man, everybody's running. Jesus is here. Whoa, get Uncle Bob. He hasn't walked in a year. Man, drag him out here. Get those sick folk up the road. Get them out on the street. Just let the border, just let the hem of his robe touch him. What happened? The demon-possessed man who was healed happened. Everywhere he went, he told him about Jesus. And you know how something like that would spread. You know, he tells six people in town. Those six people tell 10 of their friends. And those 60 tell 10 more. And those 600 tell 10 more. And those 6,000 tell 10 more. And pretty soon, the whole countryside knows about it. The whole countryside. And if anybody questions it, if anybody doubts it, they go into town and they get the guy that was demon possessed. They pull him out and say, now tell us what happened. And he'd say, well, you know, I was demon possessed. And somebody'd say, sure you were. And the other people standing around, no, he was demon possessed. You don't know what he was like. Let me tell you, he slept in the tombs. He cut himself. He ran around without clothes on. Everybody was afraid of this guy. He was nuts. And brothers and sisters, they'd look at each other and say, you really mean that? And they'd say, yeah, that's true. It's true. It's true. And they said, well, what happened? And they'd look back to the guy that had been demon-possessed. They said, why? Well, you tell him. He said, I went running down to where Jesus was. The demons drove me there. Why would they drive him there? I think to attack Jesus. And Jesus cast the demons out of him. If you don't believe me, ask the guy that used to run the pig industry here in town. Now he's selling flowers on the street corner, you know. And no more pig industry. They lost all the hogs. Everything's gone. And pretty soon that spreads and that spreads. And then one day, 6 months, a year later, one day, word comes. Jesus is coming. Somebody said, what? Who do you mean, Jesus? And they say, you know, the one that was down there and cast the demons out of the guy and all the pigs died. They say, really? They say, yeah, he's coming. When's he coming? Well, I don't know. But he landed just on shore just about 2 hours ago. They run home and say, honey, that Jesus guy that healed old so-and-so, he's coming. Really? Let's get mom. You don't know mom's been sick for so long. Nothing's helped her. We've taken her to doctors, everything. Let's get mom. Let's drag her. Get a stretcher. Don't drag her. Get a stretcher. Take her out and put her on the street. Well, you'd have drug her if you didn't have a stretcher. Get her out on the street, man. Let Jesus come by. Maybe we can't get him to stop, but let's just get him close enough. Let's get mom close enough where just the hem of the garment would touch him. And she was made whole that day. She was made whole that day. Friend, when your character has changed, it changed everything about you. It changed the impact of your life. Those people that knew you
as whatever they knew you as, and Jesus saved you, they'll know you as something different. And there's a few of them that will say, let's get to where they went. Maybe Jesus will come by and we can be made whole. My. Well, who shapes your character? Who shapes your character? The devil or Jesus? Somebody does. Somebody does. Father, in the name of Jesus, we come to you and thank you. We thank you for your wonderful, wonderful truth. What a beautiful picture this is. Doesn't matter how horrible a person is in life. Doesn't matter how far they've sunk. You are the God of gods and you cast demons out. They bow before you. They cry out in fear when they see you come. Lives are changed. Characters are made new. People become what you would have them to be. Their hearts are changed. Their minds are changed. Their lives are changed. They become a new person. And they have a new character. Oh God, may that be true for every one of us here. May that be true for every one of us here. I pray, God, that every one of us would be able to say, Jesus came by one day. And I was in the street, or I was down at the church building, or I was at home, and when Jesus came by, he touched my soul and he made me different. And because of that, I'm not what I used to be. I've been made new. I no longer have the designation as a child of the devil, but I have a declared designation as being a child of the King. Father, may that be true for us. May we say we're not what we were, and may our lives really reveal that. May that be true. Because of who you are, because of what you do, because we look to you and depend upon you and call to you. May that be true. May that be true. In Jesus' name, amen. Would you stand?